Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 533. In this episode, Scott talks with Carolina Stur about building remote-first teams.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm talking with Carolina Stur. She's calling in from Australia. How are you?
Hey, I'm good.
I'm very happy to talk to you because I'm a remote worker, as people who listen to the show know. I've been a remote worker now for, gosh, almost 9 years. And you wrote this wonderful Medium post that kind of went viral on building remote-first teams. It's quite extensive, this post.
Yeah, actually, I was giving a talk at a company that I'm working at about remote culture. So I'm working at Envato, which isn't a remote-first company, but a remote-friendly company. And there are a lot of people who are really interested in remote way of working, but because it's a 300-plus company, it's quite hard to implement that, not from very beginning. So it's quite challenging. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would be beneficial to start talking about it more openly, have more workshops about that, and just spread the general knowledge. And they're doing pretty well right now in terms of implementing flexible schedules and whatnot. And I started writing this talk. It was supposed to be a 20-minute talk, and it just grew into like 50-minute narrative and then like another 30-minute discussion. So I decided, maybe it would be beneficial to actually share that with the world. And then actually when I finished the post, it was so long, I started thinking about writing a book because it was so ridiculously long.
Yeah, Medium has this feature where they tell you how many minutes it will take to read. And it says 15 minutes, which on the internet is like an hour, you know.
Yeah, no one would read that.
But the thing that was interesting, I thought, was that the title hits you right off the bat. It says, Building Remote First. And it's that kind of like controversial statement, you know, that got people thinking when you say things like building websites mobile first. And people are like, no, that's insane. And then, of course, they do that. What do you mean by remote first?
So I think it's really important to differentiate in between remote friendly and remote first. And it actually is something that I was very frustrated about when I started working here in Australia. So as a person moving from Europe to Australia, like that's quite a significant flight of 30 hours. Like it's just very far. So even thinking about taking time off to visit your family, like it's a very big deal. So if you're not at a remote first company, that might be problematic because you just have to, you cannot work across so many time zones because it's like 9 hour difference. It's really difficult to sync with teammates. You basically can't do that unless you're working hilariously late or like really early in the morning. So it becomes problematic. So kind of out of that frustration, I really started thinking about what's the difference in between remote first and remote friendly. Because a lot of people say like, oh yeah, it's totally fine if you work from home 2 days per week, but like that's not really remote. If you know what I mean, because when you're remote first, that basically says that you can work from literally anywhere in the world at any time. So that's what remote first means to me.
Now, I've found in working at Microsoft remotely that everyone has an excuse about like why remoteness is bad. What are some of the excuses that companies use to say that we shouldn't have remote workers?
I think it's mostly meetings, trying to coordinate meetings and trying to have that face-to-face time that you're lacking when you're remote. Mm-hmm. And honestly, now that I'm working at a much bigger organization that I used to work at in the past, I actually find that problem being quite true. Like sometimes you just can't, you know, move things forward without like kind of having a face-to-face or voice-to-voice meeting. So I can definitely understand that excuse, although like really trying to forcefully have a meeting with all the people across a big team at once. I don't know if that's hugely beneficial, but I definitely understand the excuse of like trying to be on the same page, because otherwise in some scenarios, in some teams, in some companies, the communication channels aren't too great and collaboration isn't very strong. So it takes a long time to discuss something even in person. So if you think about putting that communication on email or Slack or wherever else, it will be like just terribly inefficient. So I can definitely understand that concern.
It seems like the remote worker is always the one that has to change their behavior or change their situation, or, you know, we say fall on their sword. Like I currently have three people who work for me, and I'm in Portland, which is GMT minus eight. They're GMT minus five, but I've also got one person who's in Ireland, which I think is in GMT. And it always seems like the Irish guy is the one who has to stay up late or get up early, you know? And he does it calmly and quietly and doesn't say anything, but I'm starting to realize that he hurts more as a remote and almost hides his remoteness by working later or putting up with our weirdly houred meetings. Does it always have to be that the remote person hurts the most?
That's definitely something I've thought about a lot. And that's something that has been happening to me in the past when I was working remotely, mostly from Europe for US-based companies, because that was always a 6 or 9 hour difference. And I always stayed up late to have meetings or calls and whatnot. And I did it without being negative about it, because I just always thought, well, this is the price that you pay for ultimate flexibility of working wherever and whenever you want to, which is a great flexibility, especially if you're a person who like really likes, I don't know, like to exercise or like have 100% freedom. Like it's great. But I don't know. I just kind of always thought that it was the price to pay, so I shouldn't complain about it. But on the other hand, it kind of weirds me out, especially if you have a partially remote company and you have a headquarters somewhere in one place, usually in the US, and then you have a bunch of people who are scattered all over the world and they have to comply with the HQ who sets the meetings. That kind of feels awkward. Maybe you could rotate the meetings to like make it equally uncomfortable for all the people. I don't know if that would be really feasible.
You say in your post that an excuse is I can't get this ASAP as soon as possible, and that in that idea that it has to happen immediately, we stop valuing each other's time and attention. And to our point just now, we may be valuing the remote worker's time less just because they're remote.
Yeah, maybe, because again, you have to somehow have meetings. So someone will have a meeting either really early or really late. So it will be a nuisance to someone for sure. I don't know if that's necessarily something disrespectful, but I think there would be ways to kind of mitigate how uncomfortable that makes you feel, because like not like I hate meetings in the afternoons. Like I never schedule them. And if someone really wants to talk to me in the afternoon, I'm like, can't really do that. Like that's my time off and I do whatever I want. So, I remember being slightly annoyed by that when I was working remotely with US, which basically meant meetings in the evening, or like meetings in my pajamas, which isn't like the best thing to do. So yeah.
Well, you said that your afternoon is your time. Everyone has their time that they're the most productive, or the time when they're expected to work. And they try to, you know, we spend our whole lives trying to balance time off with time at work. Do you think sometimes that the bosses in HQ, think that we, the remote workers, are just hanging out, just going to the zoo every day and just, you know, not working? Is there always that stigma that the remote worker isn't working?
I don't know. I personally never felt that, but I was quite lucky to work at some really good companies who really knew how to work remotely and are really good in terms of company culture as well and collaboration. So I personally never felt that. But I can definitely see that happening because it's easy to think like, well, they have no overlap with the HQ, so they could be doing anything, like just slacking instead of working. And then you kind of get into that mindset of trying to control and trying to figure out, is that enough contributions per day? And I just think that's a very toxic environment to be in. Like I would personally hate that.
Do you think that it gets overwhelming, the downsides? Like I find that it's quite lonely to be remote, and leaders that get it are not very common. Do you ever just say, well, it's just not worth it?
I don't know. I definitely get frustrated with it. And even when I was writing that article thinking about the downsides, I was like, oh, wow, it actually gets really hard sometimes. But honestly, especially now in my current situation where I live in Australia and all of my friends basically and all of my family is back in Europe, I really value remote because if I had full flexibility to like travel and see my friends, travel and see my family, that's really important to me. So I can tackle the downsides with easiness or with difficulty, but for that price, definitely. But I can see it being very, very lonely, especially again, if you have like leadership located somewhere else, you just feel like you don't have any impact. You feel like you don't have any, you know, like connection to the company. Like I can definitely see that being very lonely in small or big teams. It doesn't really matter, to be honest.
When I go up to the main office, there's this kind of energy and we spend a lot more time standing and in meetings. And there's an intensity of being like on campus or at the home office. And then I think to myself, well, maybe I should move here. But then I come back home and then, you know, there's an extremeness. There's the extreme intensity of being there. And then there's kind of the downside of coming back. It seems hard to find balance, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely either like really intense human interaction, which for me as a person is a little bit too much, or you go home and you're completely alone. But what I found when I'm working remotely, and sometimes I'm working for like a little kind of friends co-working space, super small for 10 people, and sometimes I'm working from home alone, so it's just me and my cat, sometimes my partner as well. But sometimes I go to the office when I'm like, oh, I have a lot of meetings, I should just go to the office and do that in person, it will be easier. But yeah, it does get really lonely, which is why I try to compensate that work loneliness with like socializing with my friends, which actually has a really good effect on mental health, because if you really make conscious effort to spend time with your friends after work, like it's a good pastime. You don't spend time overworking, which is really easy for remote people because again, time zones. And you kind of compensate for the lack of face-to-face interaction at work.
Yeah. We've tried to do open Skype calls. So we'll dedicate a monitor to just an open Skype. And even though you don't have a meeting, maybe you'll put the person off to the corner. It's almost like having a cubicle mate that sits next to you. And then we'll position the camera rather than pointing at your face, pointing to your side of your face. So this way you're not staring at some, you know, someone's random face staring at code. But the idea that you can turn your head to one side and there's your cubicle buddy. And we'll just keep a call open for, you know, an hour, hour and a half, and we'll kind of quietly work and do our thing. But there's just at least that sense that your coworker is there. We'll have remote to remote people do that, like a portal that's open to the other side.
Yeah, I think I've seen that before. I think there's even a product that does that, just people hanging out together, not necessarily for a purpose of a meeting. I think that can definitely help with the loneliness, although I can kind of imagine it being slightly creepy, like when you're at home and you're like wearing jumpsuits and your cat jumps at your face or something hilarious like that happens.
Right. Sure. I think it's all about balance, right? For me, sometimes I get frustrated because I'm either at home and it's quiet, or I'm at a cafe and it's too much, or the internet sucks. I've really struggled with, I want the people around me, but I need decent internet to have a video call. So I don't know about how it works there, but if I go to like a cafe or somewhere to sit and have coffee, there's not quality enough internet as good as my house for me to really interact with people. So, you know, I interact with other people at home using video.
Yeah, I tend to do that as well. Although Australia has really well-known problems with internet connection. Mm-hmm. And at home, I have DSL, which is the equivalent of maybe 12 megabytes down, which is hilariously bad, even in comparison to internet I had in the suburbs in Poland. Yeah. It's really bad.
It's like your phone.
Yeah, it's, oh no, if we tethered off our phones, we would have like 80 megs down. So it's really bad. Like it's disappointingly bad. Although that depends on the area of the city, like which city do you live in, which area of the city, because there is internet connection called NBN, which is supposed to be like cable speed, very fast internet, but not everyone can get it. And unfortunately, we didn't get it, so our connection is quite ridiculously bad. Sometimes we just sit at home and stare on google.com trying to load for like 3 minutes, and you just want to give up. So going into a cafe, if you know a good place, is a really good thing, because usually they will have a better connection than you do at home, which is quite ridiculous. But yeah, sometimes it just gets too busy. For me, it's a thing of like determining which are my favorite spots. I know when they're busy. I know when they're like really good to sit in to like kind of hang out for an hour or two, but it's always kind of uncomfortable for longer than that. So I'm not a huge cafe worker.
Yeah. If I only had one that had great internet, and I also don't like, I don't know how it works there, but after a few hours, they start to look at you with a side eye. Like, why are you here? You haven't ordered enough to be here as long as you are here. You should go. They don't ever say anything. They just look at you and make you feel sad. So then you have to leave.
Yeah, I kind of experienced that when I was traveling to US multiple times, especially in New York. San Francisco was better, but New York was just, they hate it. There's no internet in most of the cafes. And if you go and even order a lot, because I always feel bad about it, they're just like, you should just leave. Can you leave?
Right. You're taking up space that a paying customer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Okay, well, let's think about less of the, let's not think about the negativity, but let's think about the positive stuff. I think the number one thing that makes me happy about working remote is that I don't have to commute. My wife has a half an hour commute. I took my kids to camp this morning. It was an hour. Like, what's the average commute now?
I think it's around an hour within the US and UK as well. I actually was looking up these stats for the article because I was curious. I live fairly central, and the office that I'm commuting to is really central, but the commute is on like the worst tram line in Melbourne, and it's always crowded. It doesn't matter. It's always something weird happening on the tram, and takes like 45 minutes one way. And I just feel like it's wasted time. Like it's really bad. I just really don't enjoy that. I know some people actually use their laptop on a tram or like read something or listen to podcasts. But for me, it just feels like you're trying to force me into this tram or bus. And it just feels like a waste of time. So I definitely think that not having to commute is one of the best things.
Yeah, I could see myself perhaps tethering my phone and checking email. But, you know, there's only so much of that you can do. And if email, you know, the internet comes and goes. Of course, when I was commuting, I had to drive a car, and then you're just stuck. And I think it increases your stress, and it might even shorten your life.
Yeah, I read some studies about stress connected to commuting, and there's basically no positivity in commute at all. I mean, sure, you could maybe cycle in some cities with good weather and whatnot and backtracks, but other than that, I can't see any positive outcomes of that.
Could it be argued then that remote workers could be more productive because we have that extra hour or hour and a half a day? And plus, I feel like remote workers, because we feel a little bit guilty about being remote, we also tend to work more hours at night.
Oh yeah, I feel like remote workers definitely try to overcompensate because like they feel like they have so many distractions at their homes that you need to make up for that. And also you have to show more output because, well, no one sees you at the office. So how would they know how good you are? Right. Which is kind of toxic as well. Like it has a downside, but, to me, that commute time that's not wasted is just more time to myself. I'm usually up quite early, so I can even start working at 7 and I'm done by 3, and I have so much time to myself, which is great.
Now, doesn't that mean that you are a person who sprints, like you don't sit down and check Reddit from 7 to 3. You are sitting down and you work. And when you are done, then you are done. It sounds like you've compartmentalized your work quite nicely. That takes some willpower, I would think.
I actually struggle with distractions. Sometimes I get stuck on Twitter or I start reading some Medium articles, but it's not too bad. Mm-hmm. Or the eternal problem of too many Slack channels forever existing in our current state of technology. But it's not too bad, I must say. I just prefer to be productive and do whatever I plan to do for a day and then work on my side projects or just go out or do whatever else I plan to do.
Yeah, I feel like I distraction is a big problem, and I'm always working at different times. I talk a lot about work-life balance, but I'm always trying to make up for things. Like today, I picked my kids up at camp at 4, so I'm very aware of the fact that there was a 60-minute period in the middle of the day where I was gone. I was not working. I was with my kids. So when I put them to sleep tonight, I will try to make up that hour. I wish I could be more focused and just compartmentalize my work.
I've kind of learned to accept that, especially in like deeply technical work or even design work, you just can't do more than 6 hours per day. Like it's just impossible. I don't know how many people have the mental capacity to be highly productive for more than 6 hours. I definitely can't. So I just embrace that. And besides, remote workers are trying to overcompensate, so work longer hours, and they're very conscious of the distractions, like going to a gym, going out for lunch, or whatever else they do. But if you think critically about people at offices, they procrastinate all the time. Like it's not really a problem that's really a remote person problem. Like it happens in offices all the time. People go play ping pong. People chat for like 40 minutes by the elevator or elsewhere. Like, so I don't know. I just don't try not to guilt myself that I was away for 30 minutes because like my cat was annoying or something else. Like I try to reach my goals for the day every single day and try to be as productive as possible, but I'm not trying to guilt myself, which is a problem for remote workers. Like it's quite obvious that they guilt themselves into working more because of that overcompensation of like lack of your physical presence in the office.
So you're arguing for not just self-care, but also for forgiving oneself and saying, listen, you're only going to get so many hours of work done. You're really not going to, you shouldn't fool yourself into thinking that you're going to get 12 productive hours a day. And there's no reason to feel bad about that. The reality is, people work a little bit and then they take a break and then they work a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I say that, but I struggle with that mindset all the time. And I was even thinking about that lately, how we perceive people on the web, like people who work in the industry and how much they output. And we're so output oriented and think that artists achieve so much and we achieve so little as individuals. It's a problem. Like we have to kind of cut ourselves a little bit of slack and realize, okay, this is the amount of time I probably will be productive today because that's my mental capacity. And also we have to take breaks. But you know, it's reasonable to set up small goals and just push forward. And if you have progress each day, that's good. Like that's what you have to count on, because you can't just set unreasonable goals and sacrifice your own personal time just to be like, oh, I clocked 9 hours. Yes, that was really great. Because I don't think anyone thinks that after like 9 hours of work.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had mentioned slacking off, which reminded me of Slack, which everyone seems to think is the second coming of the great productivity tool that, you know, Moses himself brought down the Ten Commandments, and they went back up and brought us Slack. I personally find Slack to be extremely distracting, and I'm now in 7 different Slacks, and there's no easy way to sign into them all. I'm constantly switching around. It's almost like having 7 Slack channels is like opening up 7 tabs in your browser that are all refreshing with new information that you're not sure if you need or not. So you just panic and run around checking stuff, and none of it is any value. I'm surprised. I love my friends at Slack, and I originally liked Slack, but if you don't have one Slack channel, I don't know how people survive. Like, I don't know what you can do with more than one.
Yeah, I definitely, I love their design, and I love the execution. I'm a fan of Slack, but yeah, I'm in several Slacks. I think five at this point. I think I left four of them because I just couldn't read them. And I was like, I just can't bear the stress of just having those unread notifications. So many of them. I have to look at it during the work hours, definitely, because there's just so many notifications from like deploys or bugs, stuff that I have to react to. So I definitely have to check that. And there are some questions that I just ask synchronously to people that I work with. So that's good. But other than that, I've experimented with Do Not Disturb. I experimented with hiding all the channels and DMs that don't have unreads, which is actually quite calming, I found. Quite a good feature, but definitely I think Slack in general, people really love it, but I think it's really dangerous for productivity. I definitely, my best work happens when I turn it off, like, but that's work outside of work actually, because during work times again, like I have to have it on.
Right. Would it not be fair to say then that your feelings about email are probably similar? Like email is just Slack with a crappy interface and a little bit more asynchronous. You do your best work when it's closed.
Yeah, I only open email like twice per day, maybe. I don't keep it open.
In my productivity talks, I challenge people, and I would challenge the people who are listening right now, to not check email in the morning. If you check email first thing in the morning, it's a really easy way to time travel to after lunch.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it always depends on the person how much email they get. I never got a lot of emails because I'm very clear on my expectations. I don't sign up for a lot of things. I'm very picky. I'm quite efficient with the conversations that I have. So it's not too bad for me, but I definitely can see that happening. And I think it's super refreshing to just keep it to once or twice per day. Like it's meant to be asynchronous. So don't expect that someone will reply to you in 15 minutes.
So when thinking about hiring, what do you do if a company isn't like, what if you're the first remote, or what if you're just trying to get hired somewhere? Like you people won't hire you unless there's already remotes there, right?
Usually, yes. I actually, when I was looking for a new gig last year in November, I talked to a lot of companies and a lot of them claimed that they were remote and they weren't. There are a lot of companies who are US based and say like, yeah, we are remote. And then when you say, oh, I'm from Europe or from Australia, and they're like, oh, no, we don't do that. So that's again, circling back to remote first and remote friendly. Like again, that's just saying that sure, like you can work outside of an office, but within a country. So to me, that's kind of faking remoteness. So definitely it's better to go into a company that has been already doing remote because they probably have some tools in place, they have some experience. Otherwise, it's quite scary, depending on which scale. If it's a small startup, then I guess you have more control over the process. You can kind of implement changes quickly. So that would work better. But in bigger companies, just transferring, you know, like changing from completely on-site company to remote company can oftentimes be a disaster because they just don't have the tools or the experience. So I think if you're trying to build a remote culture, definitely you have to hire people who have experience in that and have knowledge to share in that topic.
And when you finally have hired someone, do you think it's important to match the job perks? Because it seems like on-site people get parties and perks and different things that are available, or they might get different healthcare while you're in another country and you might get different healthcare. How do you match the perks of remotes and on-site employees?
So that's a thing that might be quite problematic, but I still think it's an issue that can be solved. I was always very frustrated because I never got any perks. And also you're always, in most scenarios, a consultant from overseas. So you pay your own tax, you do your own accounting, you do this and that. So there's a lot of overhead for you as a person. And there are no perks. Like you don't get a free phone, or like sometimes you don't even get a free laptop. You don't get anything. And I'm like, well, I'm the same quality of an employee, right? You hired me full time to work at a company. So there's no difference in between me and a person who is like in country X, working in an office. So I think you can definitely like order equipment and send it to them. Like that's not a problem. You can match health insurance. You can say like, okay, what's the cost of health insurance in your country? I'm going to pay that on top of your salary or your career plan. Like you can fix that. So that's just kind of up to the company to make that work. And I think there are companies that do that, like Buffer or Help Scout.
Do you think that there's just a list? Like, I see at the end of your post, you list out some of the companies that we all know are good at remote stuff. But I mean, surely there must be a better way to find folks than just to pick the top 12 companies.
Yeah, there is a GitHub repository that Jessica Card from GitHub was working on, and people contribute to it for like last couple months. But again, they have all of them have different understandings of remote, and a lot of them are US only, which again enters that gray area of, is it really remote or is it not? So yeah, I actually found it really problematic. It's a really hyped topic to talk about, remote. Everyone is like, we love remote. There are so many remote jobs. But if you start looking for them, there isn't many. I feel like remote is still a thing that is very, very viable in the US. But if you are from Europe or if you are from Asia or Australia, that just becomes such a novelty and such a thing that's difficult to do that you have to overcome a lot to make that work.
I think that it's for lack of a better word, it's foreign, right? We don't know what's involved tax-wise or monetary-wise. It's just, it's the unknown, isn't it?
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of costs involved, but also a lot of gains because sometimes you don't have an HQ. Sometimes it's just cheaper to hire elsewhere. There are just many, many aspects of understanding what remote really entails.
How important is it that people, you know, either speak or write extremely, you know, excellent English, that they're well spoken and well easy to communicate with?
I wouldn't say I worked with some, English is not my primary language, obviously. But I was working with people who had, I would say, intermediate English, and I was able to communicate with them quite effectively. So I wouldn't discourage hiring people who don't have perfect English, but I think that communication skills are absolutely necessary, and it's crucial that they're really good. And it doesn't really rely on whether you're from US or English, you know, speaking country, because I worked with some people who, you know, were native in English and they were terrible communicators. So I wouldn't say like that's a definite if you're not from that country, but it's definitely super important.
So folks can find your Medium post at medium.com/@Fox, F-O-X. And you've got a great URL, one of the best URLs I've ever seen, which is thefox.is, thefox.is. And from there, we can find your GitHub and your photography and your GitHub repo and the conferences that you speak at and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks so much for chatting with me today, Carolina.
Awesome. That was great.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.